Well, he's back. Ghost hunter, author, Emmy-nominated host, writer, producer of the New England Legends series on PBS and Amazon Prime. We have Jeff Bellinger back in the Truth Be Told studios to talk about what? Of course, ghosts, haunted places, and what the hell's been going on in his world. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome back to the Truth Be Told studios for the manyth time, the one and only Jeff Bellinger.
Hey, there he is.
He's back.
It was more
it's good to be anywhere. Let me be honest with you.
Right, and it was more like a threat. I was like, "He's back." It was like,
"Fine, let's just get this over with."
Right. All right. Count the minutes. Well, we are excited to have you back. I don't even know how many times you've been on over the years, but thank you for being here. And real quick, for our community, you may not know it, but we lost a great member. So many people are dropping like flies right now, and Clifford Mahudi, Zuni Elder, he passed away a couple days ago, and so I just want to send my heartfelt prayers and love to go out to his family and friends and colleagues. So I wanted to say that. So Clifford, fly high, my friend.
Boy, it's crazy. Meatloaf died.
Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson died. Meatloaf died. So Meatloaf, by the way, I have a weird Meatloaf story.
Oh,
let's start there.
Let's start with that.
Meatloaf was huge in the 70s, right? He had the Bat Out of Hell album and all that. And then he vanished for like 15, almost 20 years. Well, what he was doing was raising a family. And when I went to high school, I went to Newtown High School in Connecticut. And one of our rival high schools was Reading. And when I was a student, the girls' softball team of Reading was coached by Coach Meatloaf.
No way.
So he was the high school coach of a rival team. And he also coached soccer. So his kids, went to college, and then he started his whole second phase of his career. And by the way, huge fan of the paranormal Meatloaf, right?
Was he really?
Yeah, multiple episodes of Ghost Hunters and things like that. Huge, huge fan of the subject, and just absolutely an all around decent human being, great dad. And it's a shame, everybody's got to go sometime, but at least you leave that legacy, you know?
Yeah, that's, I have to say, the ones we've lost have left a legacy that their spirit will live on forever just through their work. So, I mean.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can we all hope for the same? You know what I mean? Like you think about that, like Betty White, right? I saw some meme that was just like, live the kind of life that when you go 99 years and the whole nation agrees, that's not enough.
Right. You know what I mean? Right.
And you're like, totally, and just, I don't know, there's a lesson there for all of us. And not to like segue right into ghosts, but to me, that's kind of like what a ghost is, right? In one regard, it's a memory and it's a connection to the people in the past.
Right.
And so, what kind of memory are we going to leave? What kind of legacy are we going to leave that people will either want to connect to, want to avoid, or forget for, want to forget for infamous reasons or whatever. And it's all part of the whole equation. It's all part of this thing we call the paranormal and the supernatural.
And I think that's why, people still are fascinated from day one of this planet, from the paranormal and the supernatural and the afterlife and the gods and pretty much anything, because it's the mystery of it. And like Betty says, once you go, the secret. So she says, we know everything on this planet, and when we live on this planet, we kind of know. If we don't know, we can find out, she says, but that's the only thing we don't know until we die. And so now she knows the secret, they say.
I remember she was hosting Saturday Night Live one of the times she was doing it, and she made some crack about, like, at my age, if I want to talk to my friends, I need to use a Ouija board, and you're just like, she's awesome to the end. And I think we've all sort of felt our mortality a little bit more over these last couple of years, we all must know someone, right? That we've lost to COVID or whatever, mm-hmm. or you can't be more than 2 degrees removed at this point. And we just, a lot of us hunkered down in our homes for a long time, and homes that maybe we never thought were haunted until we spent a year in them, like not leaving.
Right. Now when you're stuck in your home and you start listening to everything, you're like, wait a minute, I'm starting to hear sounds that I didn't notice before, and because I'm here 24/7.
yeah, everything, right? Like, so, I mean, in my house, I was like, oh man, I really got to paint that ceiling. It's gross, like over there.
And right.
But then, like, so many subtle things that we tune into because we're so busy in the before right. times. You know, you're so hectic. You work. You come home. You mm-hmm. eat. You crash on the couch. You go to sleep. You wake up. You do it again. And I think we miss things, and it sort of forced us all to slow down. Really good for some of us, really bad for others. Some people couldn't stand their own company.
Right. Well, let's talk about that, because it's, I think a lot of people, they even said like UFOs more people have seen them because more people were paying attention. What about ghosts? Have you heard more people contact you about seeing things more during this time?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's a combination of, when you feel your mortality, you're a little bit afraid, right? Mm-hmm. Cemeteries, for whatever reason, people always talk about cemeteries being haunted, which always sounded a little bit silly, right? Because
right.
if you're a ghost and can go anywhere, like, that's sort of boring. I mean,
yeah,
you could
why
do better.
Would you go there?
Yeah, right. You'd go to like football stadiums and concerts and, you know, all kinds of things.
Right.
Or your home, where you were comfortable. But I think that cemeteries, of course, have more to do with the living than the dead. They always did. And you walk around and you're like, wow, there's just hundreds, maybe thousands of humans below the ground, below my feet. And you sort of know that that's ultimately your destination. And you feel that mortality, you get a little bit afraid. And when you're afraid, there's a physiological thing that happens to your brain. We're literally you open up because your senses need to get sharper. When we're scared, our brain's like, do I need to be ready for fight or flight? And
right.
and so every sense gets open and sharp. And so I think part of what happened was, the anxiety, the fear that we all went through when we were locked in. Are we going to get sick? Am I going to get someone else sick? What's going to happen to me? Am I going to survive financially, losing
right.
income and jobs and all that stuff? Like, we were anxious and afraid. And I think that opened us up to stuff that's probably around us all the time. It's just at that point, we sort of could tune into it. And so, yeah, I did. I mean, I heard people that were just like, my house is haunted and I can't leave it. I don't even know where to go. And that was interesting. I'm a fan of horror movies. I think a lot of us are, you love that. And when you watch the haunted house trope, right? Like at some point in the audience, you go, just get out. Just leave.
Right. But you couldn't.
And that's why the movie Alien works so well, because they couldn't leave. The
right.
monster was in the ship. And if you go outside, you die.
Right.
So,
right.
And that's, I think, how a lot of us felt. Like, suddenly, like,
that's
I can't
a good analogy.
Go distract. Yeah. And so I think the fear factor was just sort of raised everywhere. And I heard about like UFO stuff too. And I thought about that, right? I actually worked on a case recently. I've been filming these shock docs for Discovery Plus.
Tell us about it.
Well, I've done a bunch of them. I did one about like demons in the White House. I did one about Ed and Lorraine Warren, one about the Conjuring case. And I recently did one about a UFO. I don't know if I'm allowed to say yet because it's not going to be out for a few months.
Okay.
But the UFO case, and it's funny because to prep for it, I listened to some of your archives because you interviewed the main witness.
Oh, okay.
I know. Now you're intrigued.
I am. I'm like, wait a minute.
Okay. What the hell? It was Whitley Strieber.
Loved him. Yeah.
Yeah. It was great. It was a great interview. And it was great to hear Whitley talk about it all these years later. Right. I mean, cause
right.
It's one thing to hear an event, hear about an event right after it happened. It's another when you've had decades to reflect. And so it was appreciated to sort of hear his words, on your show. But I was thinking about it. His UFO encounter happened the day after Christmas, 1985, which is, I think, sort of an important part of the story. If you were observing us, you would notice, and I looked it up, Christmas that year, I think, was like a Wednesday, which is, right? So if you were observing us, you would see all this hustle and bustle, and then there's this one day where everything stops, Christmas. And you go,
right.
Well, what's different about this day that all the stores are closed and
right.
no one's moving around? So if you were observing us, we had a whole year of that, right? Like, wait, we're used to, if you observed every day, there'd be millions of cars on the road, always moving,
mm-hmm.
moving, and that just dropped to like almost nothing. And
yeah.
all the patterns changed drastically. The air traffic changed drastically,
right.
Everything. And so if you were observing us, you'd say something happened, something shifted, something changed. And I think that rippled across everything. Everything observable. And so people became more aware of just about everything.
And it was like that here in California. I mean, L.A. is one of those, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a billion people on the road. And it is kind of a eerie feeling driving to work, because I came to work every day, even though, you know, we're, because being, I guess, quote, quote, media, we didn't have to close. But driving to work, there was no cars on the road. That is just the eeriest feeling. Living in LA, and you're like,
right,
woo doo 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 doo. It was just,
it's what you've always wanted, and now, right, now that you got it,
right. So,
you're like, ooh.
So I was going to ask, you know, what do you think this time? I mean, do you feel like the veil has shifted? Because even with the less traffic and all these things, they said the clouds were, you know, the skies were clear, everything was more cleaner because we didn't have the exhaust from, you know, all the factories going and everything. And do you feel like the veil was thinner at this time, or is it more activity, or was it just because we had more time to notice it?
Yeah, I think it's mainly more about time and us. I think when it comes to anything paranormal, the living people are the most crucial part of the equation,
right?
This stuff doesn't exist without us. There could be a UFO right now on the dark side of the moon, but if we're not there to observe it, what's it matter? You know what I mean? There could be a ghost in a room down the hall, but
right,
if no one's
if we
in
don't
there to see
it, yeah.
it doesn't matter. And so I think what happened was we had a shift. We had a shift that made us maybe a little bit more open. Because of this fear factor, feeling our mortality, understanding a little bit more about how fragile we are, which is sort of scary. Just like, wow, man, this little thing I can't even see could take us all out. And it's happened before. You know, you get a little bit of a history lesson and things like that. Spanish flu and mm-hmm. you could actually name tons of other plagues. And so I think the shift was with us. People became more spiritual. People became, you know, a little less ragged from their jobs. So I think that's our future, right? Is it's going to be us deciding to make that shift, to sort of be a little more observant of these subtle things that are around us. Because the way we were going, and by the way, let's be honest, we're getting back to it anyway.
Right, right.
It's not really sustainable. Right. And I'm not here to preach anything. It's just a fact. Like, we just can't keep that up.
No, so, not at all. Yeah. Well, like you said, you know, I actually had a lot of opportunities during these last 2 years. It gave me more time to, like you said, get things going that I've always wanted to start, or new projects that I wanted to work on that I just didn't have time on. And it sounds like you've been pretty busy also. So what have you been doing to keep you busy? It sounds like you've been shooting some stuff and working on new projects.
Yeah. So there was that. And then one of my favorite things to do, you know, I research a lot of stories. I mean, I got my own podcast, New England Legends, right. That we never stopped. That kept going every week. And that's just the podcast is they're short. They're like 12 to 15 minutes
right. Scripted
stories about some weird thing in New England, whether it's aliens or ghosts or monsters or cryptids or whatever.
Right.
So that kept going. Worked for the Shock Docs. I still work on the show Ghost Adventures as the writer and researcher every episode since episode one. It's literally been 14 years.
Oh my God.
And wow. So though we went on a hiatus for a little while because everything stopped, we started again and we started, you know, filming again. So that picked up again, you know. And so my favorite thing to do though is to tell these stories in front of live audiences. And I started doing these Zoom programs for various organizations all over. So I was doing what I used to do in front of live audiences, but doing it for this little dot right here, which is not quite the same. But
right.
Man, I did over 100 of them all over the world, you know, just sharing my stories, which was good. It kept me sane. You know what I mean? Like, I've come to realize that I will die without an audience. Like, that's me. I mean, I own it. I'm whatever. You can say whatever you want, but I need one. And so it was my fix during tough times. And I heard from so many people that, like, it was their fix too, that they felt sort of social, that we could hang out or at least feel like it, you know, when we're on Zooms and things like that. And so I was able to kind of like share my stories and keep what I do going and reach new people, just not in person. So,
right.
So, you know, I was grateful for that. You make it work, right? I mean, that's what we had to do. Mm-hmm. Grandpa used to say, you fish or cut bait.
Right.
So you cut bait.
Yeah. And well, tell us some of the new stories that you've come up or discovered during this time. You said there, it's not even just, you know, ghost, because truth be told, it's not all about just ghosts. We're about crypto. We're about, you know, we're about ghosts and UFOs and any type of paranormal. So what have you discovered in this time?
Well, it was cool. My podcast has really become like crowdsourced at this point. Like, so much of the audience shares these stories, and my favorite stories are like the really obscure ones that, like, if you lived in this little town, you might know it.
Right.
But the rest of the world didn't. And one of my
those
favorite
are fun
ones that,
actually.
Totally fun. So yeah. Here's one that came up. I grew up in Connecticut. And this was from Bridgeport, Connecticut. I'd never heard of it until this past year. And someone told me about this particular headstone. And it made me think instantly that I've cracked the joke for a long time. You know, I was raised Catholic, and I haven't been to church in a while because I don't want lightning to strike, and I don't want anyone innocent to get, you know, hurt, right?
Right.
there's a grave in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I've brought it up lest you think I've memorized it, but I will read you the epitaph. It says, "Here lies buried the body of Mr. David Sherman, who was killed by lightning in the house of God at public worship the 28th of July, 1771, the 35th year of his age."
What?
Struck by lightning in church and was killed when lightning struck him in church. And I'm like, wait, 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 wait. It can actually happen?
I was going to say, did he say, God is my witness, if lightning strikes me, if I
may lightning strike me now. So wait, so when I'm the kind of guy, when I see a headstone like that, I go, all right, I'm not sleeping until I know more, you know?
Right, right.
So I start digging, and there's a town nearby called Fairfield, Connecticut, and a guy named William Wheeler wrote a journal about the various history of the region. And the year 1771 only has a single entry. And that would be this lightning strike. And it says, July 1771, lightning struck the Stratfield meeting house and killed Uncle John Burr, ripped open the shoes of his brother Ozias that stood near him, and killed likewise David Sherman. Holy crap, two guys were killed in this lightning strike, and one guy lost a shoe.
Now I want to know who lost the shoe. I was kidding.
Brother Ozias, right? And then I kept digging. I'm like, this is amazing, right? People died. I don't mean to make light of it, but right. God, they died in church after being struck by lightning. And then I found in the Burr family records that the parson stopped his praying after this happened, and he uttered the following words, "Are we all here?" And all I could think about was the next time Parson Rose passed around the collection plate, I bet he did all right.
Right. You know I'm sure he did.
he's like, so here we are.
Right.
I'm here to keep our moral fiber in check. But just, you know, stories like that. I love them. I love these like weird, odd things that people kind of don't know about, you know, unless you're like that local. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, even in my hometown there, you know, there are like, you would not think in a town of 200 people that they would actually have any type of murders. And there were like three types of murders in my lifetime when I was a kid around that area. And you would be like, what the hell? One was apparently this guy borrowed my dad's shotgun.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, if you know, because it's a hunting town, and they were out at the bar, and somehow some guy pissed somebody off, and the shotgun was used in killing this guy, but nobody ever figured out who killed the person, but it was with my dad's shotgun.
Did your dad get the shotgun back?
No, they destroyed it. The family wanted it destroyed, but yeah, I mean, there's always these little stories you just never know about, these small towns.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, yeah. But which probably caused now probably some ghost or spirit to walk around in downtown Granola, Kansas.
Or at the very least, some discomfort among the Sweet family.
Right, right.
Don't, I'm uncomfortable right now.
Yeah, don't loan out dad's shotguns.
That's the moral of the story. Man, oh man. Yeah, no, that's quite a thing to live with. Be like, ever tell you about the time I loaned out a shotgun? And yeah, don't do it.
Right. Yeah. Well, how do you find out most of these stories? Do people write into you, or do you just go to towns and just do your own research?
It's been pretty cool. Like, you know, at this point, it's like I said, it's sort of crowdsourced. You know, people are like, hey, man, I heard the story. It sounds like this one. And then you go down these rabbit holes, which is so fun.
Right.
I got to look into the first documented UFO encounter in New England.
Ooh, tell. We got to know this.
So this goes back to the very earliest days, 1638. And it was filed. The report was filed by the governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony, Governor John Winthrop. And I'll read this to you. It's very short.
Please do.
And quick. So this is the entire entry on this UFO encounter. It says, in this year, one James Everill, a sober, discreet man, and two others saw a great light in the night at Muddy River. Muddy River's right outside of Boston. When it stood still, it flamed up and was about 3 yards square. When it ran, it was contracted into the figure of a swine or a pig, and it ran as swift as an arrow toward Charlton, Mass. And so up and down about 2 or 3 hours, they were come down in a lighter, which is like a small boat, about a mile. And when it was over, they found themselves carried quite back against the tide to the place they came. Diverse other credible persons saw the same light at about the same place. That's it.
Wow.
That's the whole entry. That is everything. And what I love about it is it has every element of the UFO encounter. Missing time.
Right.
Right. It's got. Now, by the way, James Everill was a pig farmer. So he did his best. Right. It looked like a pig. It looked like a swine in the sky. I mean, that's what it looked like. That's what he knows. And so, you know, they had the missing time. You had multiple witnesses, and the boat should have drifted down the river by natural flow. And it had not after multiple hours.
My gosh.
I mean, you would expect to be at least a couple miles away from where you were, and they were not. And that's it. That's the whole entry. Matter of fact, the governor put it in the log, and there it is, you know, today, you know, still there for us to read. And I'm like, that's kind of amazing.
That is amazing, because you don't – I've never heard of that story before.
1638. So, the pilgrims landed in 1620.
Right.
So not that long after. You know,
can't blame it on the government at that time.
Right. Yeah. You can't call it some cover up. Yeah. The governor's like, hey, this is what happened. Whatever. The guy's in good standing with his church. Seems like a decent fellow. Here's what he said.
Wow. And, how did you find that? Somebody, just a local person, sent that in?
Well, someone was telling me that, like, you know, there was some UFO encounter way back when the pilgrims had it, you know, and so yeah, you start looking, and then, you find one clue and then another. And then
that's pretty cool, though.
You know, New England, especially, like, we save everything, man. Like, we got, it's all here, you know, and, you know, the governor's old books have been updated and printed, and every library has a copy. And and so you get to go through pouring through these old things, and man, oh man. And like the stuff that turns up, witch stories, you know, I mean, everyone knows Salem. There was witch trials everywhere.
Yeah. Salem just happened to be
Salem's the most infamous. Turns out Hartford, Connecticut had executed 11 people decade and a half before Salem.
Really?
But no one knows about it.
Was it the same as, you know, just some preacher, or was it how did that one start?
So Hartford, it turns out those 11 people were all, so in Salem, it was one hysteria, right? It was a couple of months, everybody going nuts. Hartford was over the span of years and throughout the state. So it was just little individual witch trials here and there. And the reason nobody knows about it is because when Salem went down, 1692, the aftermath, everybody was appalled. Everyone was like, you can't use spectral evidence. You can't, this is terrible. Like this was a total miscarriage of justice. And in Hartford, people started like scratching their heads going, shoot, we did that here. And so they got rid of all the records. They were destroyed.
Yeah.
But all the family records survive, right? Like family journals and stuff like that, saying, mom was taken away and hanged for witchcraft or whatever. And I met this guy in Connecticut who considers himself a witch, and he was trying to build a memorial. He was trying to raise $5,000. That's it. $5,000 to just put a stone commemorating the 11 people illegally hanged. And he went to the governor of Connecticut and he said, we need to pardon these people. And the governor said, I can't. We weren't Connecticut. We weren't even like
a state
America yet, you know? And so he goes to the Queen of England, right? He goes to the office and says,
we
need a posthumous pardon. And the Queen's office says, we have stuff in place for this. Send us the court documents. And if we agree, we will absolutely issue the pardon. But there's no court documents. They were destroyed.
Oh, no.
So the guy doesn't give up. He goes to the individual Windsor, Connecticut was the first. He goes to the town council and says, you need to issue a proclamation pardoning this woman that was hanged centuries ago. And they did it. They unanimously did it. They put it on like a little piece of parchment in the town, probably cost them about $2. And they proclaimed that we hereby pardon this woman. And then he had sort of like a template to go around to the other towns and say, we need to issue these posthumous pardons. And he's trying to raise money to put this memorial up. And I'm like, how amazing is that?
That is amazing. And I'm sure the spirits of these people are set free in a way, just because now they are set free from this, curse that was put on them.
Part of it too is that I think the acknowledgement, right, is like gives you that peace that you so desperately need. Like this was wrong, and even though the wrong happened like 3 centuries ago, it still needs to be righted, and that's because who it haunts, right? It haunts us. That's the thing. You know, like when something really bad has happened, a misjustice or whatever, like we are haunted by that. And how can we make it right? And those ghosts don't leave us alone. And I truly believe that's a big part of this, is that we keep it around because we need to keep it around, because we there's some lesson we still haven't learned yet.
Yeah. Well, that's human nature anyway.
Yeah.
With everything that we do. You know, my sister once, she used to do clam, freshwater clams. They'd go out to the rivers and get these clams, and then they would sell them, and they'd use them for medicine or whatever they do with them. And she actually, and this was in Kansas, she actually saw a, she swears it was kind of a Bigfoot. Have you ever had any stories about Connecticut or in the New England about a Bigfoot or any type of creatures that we usually hear about only in stories?
Yeah, absolutely. So in North Adams, Massachusetts, there's the Monster of Coca-Cola Ledge.
Monster of Coca-Cola Ledge. Now
I know you're in, right? Like
that got me right there. I'm gonna see if I can.
Yeah, I know. Like that should be a band or something. But,
right?
by all descriptions, it's a Bigfoot. But Coca-Cola Ledge, there's this big cliff that overlooks the town of North Adams, which is on the very western part of the state. And way back, I think it was the 30s, the Coca-Cola company painted their logo like a billboard on the side of the cliff. And so it got to be known as Coca-Cola Ledge because of the painted billboard. That's been gone for many, many decades. And it's been replaced by, there's a local college, fraternities paint their letters up there and things like that. But this ledge is really tall. If you fall off the top of it, I guarantee you will not get hurt. You're going to die. It will be lethal. That's a one-way trip. But it's very easy to get to the top. It's a gentle hill, kind of like on either side,
right?
So you can just hike your way up to get up to the very top. And so so people have described seeing this tall, like blondish, but long-haired, 7 feet tall, 8 feet tall creature that's up there sort of lurking. And it's one of those stories that, like, I think the parents were sort of fine propagating it. You know what I mean? Because it is dangerous up there. And if you go up there and if a monster can keep you scared away, then all the better, right?
Right,
it might keep your kids safe. So I do think that's sort of part of it. But it's one of these, like, great stories that locals know about. But that's just one. I mean, Massachusetts, October Mountain had multiple sightings in the 1980s of a Bigfoot type creature.
Really?
One of them, there was old Boy Scout camp. It's long been closed now, but someone just sort of saw like a hairy creature walk by. But the second one that happened, I think like 1987 or so, someone watched this Bigfoot type creature stacking rocks and witnessed it and said, it came back, told the newspaper, it was in the paper, that this thing had happened. And and everybody still sort of talks about it. So multiple, you know, Bigfoot, Big Harry of Cedar Swamp, which is in the central part of the state, that's a Bigfoot type creature. So we have them here in New England. And of course, up in Maine, Maine's got, you know, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire. He gets around for sure.
Oh,
I mean,
Harry.
Not like the Pacific Northwest. I think that's, they really got the, you know, the bulk.
Right. Right.
But absolutely, there's sightings around here as well.
I'm sure. Oh, Harry, he gets around. I heard he does.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about, a lot of people are thinking like UFOs and ghosts or spirits are very similar to each other. Or sometimes people get those mixed up where they may see a spirit, but it could be extraterrestrial visitation. What is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's. I think it all comes down to labels. Right. It mm-hmm. depends what books you read, what shows you listen to or watch or whatever. You know, one person's ghost is another person's demon, is another person's alien.
Right.
Right. Is another person's coincidence or overtiredness or whatever. And so I think in some cases, when we see something we don't understand, something that doesn't compute, we have to fit it in some kind of box. And so that goes to, maybe we go to our religion. Well, that's a demon because I don't understand it. It's not normal, or it's an angel, or, you know, I grew up on sci-fi, it's a UFO. I sort of think that there's something that could tie all of this stuff together, which sort of makes the most sense to me. And that's that all of it makes perfect sense somewhere on our timeline, but not right now.
Right.
Right. Ghosts are easy and obvious, right?
Right.
You see a Civil War soldier, that made sense in 1860, not today in 2022. Bigfoot, maybe that made sense, you know, a million years ago or 2 million years ago. UFOs, maybe that makes perfect sense 500,000 years from now. I've always struggled with, you know, why do the descriptions of the aliens look so human, right? Two eyes, a nose, a mouth,
right,
a head,
right.
Arms, fingers. Like, yeah, I know, different than us, bigger skin and all that other stuff, but so very human. We look the way we do because we evolved on this planet that has this much gravity and this close to the sun and this level of oxygen and nitrogen and everything else. That's why we look like we do. If our planet was 10 times bigger, we might be really low to the ground, you know, because there's more gravity. We might be like amorphous blobs, but totally smart, you know? So I've always struggled with that. Why do they look so very human? Maybe that's us. Maybe that's what we're destined to look like.
Our future. Yeah, a lot of people think that too. They think that it could be just us coming back from our future and trying to save us from our own destruction or something.
I get it. And the problem with that, though, is that if you believe that time travel is possible, and I'm not here to say it isn't. I mean, in fact, I think, you know, shoot, it's been observed, right? Ripples in space-time.
Right.
I remember a few years ago, those two galaxies formed, two black holes collided, and it sent this ripple, and we measured it. I mean, it was tiny. But if you're at a very still pond and someone throws a big boulder on one side, if you're near the boulder, I mean, right? You got tidal waves.
Well, look at the volcano just happened.
If you're way on the other side of the pond, it'll just get there in little tiny ripples.
Right.
So, sure. However, if you accept that time travel is possible, the problem with going back and trying to fix things is that you absolutely must accept the notion of the multiverse,
right,
if time travel is possible, which is the old grandfather paradox, right? So you go back in time, you kill your grandfather before he's had any children.
Now
the multiverse says, okay, you know, fine. The universe splits at that moment, and there's the universe where you never existed, and there's the universe where nothing changed. He went on, had children, eventually you were born, and the whole bit. And so changing the timeline won't change the future. It'll just change some alternate future that you could probably never get back to anyway.
Yeah. That's scary. That is scary.
Right. So maybe, I don't know, or maybe they come back and, you know, the takeaway is that it's up to us to change it, you know, up to us to change it right now. Whitley Strieber talked about that. And I don't know if he talked about it in your interview. He talked about it in his book.
Yeah. I don't think he talked about it in our interview,
but what I love about the way Whitley Strieber's wrote a book called Communion about his abduction story from 1985. And what I love about the way he described it is that he worked very hard to not put a label on it, to not put it in a box, right? He called them visitors. He said, I don't know. Yes, you could guess other planet, but I don't know. Maybe not. You know, maybe time travel, maybe spiritual, maybe this, maybe that. And as he got later in life, I think he took a much more spiritual view on what those visitors were, as opposed to calling them extraterrestrials or whatever. It was very much a spiritual experience for him. And so I don't know, maybe that's the lesson we all got to kind of learn as more of these stories get out, maybe more of us have our own experiences, that it's, there's, you know, how do we reckon with our own lives and our own place in this world?
Do you, I don't know if you, I can't remember the exact Star Trek movie, but it was when, you know, the original Captain Kirk and Spock, they had to come back to the, or go back in time and get the whale,
right,
and bring it back to the future, so
to talk,
and yeah, to save the planet.
Yeah,
and it's maybe, I mean, that could be also maybe resources that they don't have in the future, that maybe they're coming back for resources, who knows.
It's so, but here's the other thing, right? And this is what makes me think about, like, you know, when I think about interplanetary travel, if there was a world like ours, like with the right amount of oxygen and nitrogen,
right.
I mean, can you imagine how lethal it would be? Just the viruses that you know, we can exist in our world because we've evolved to be able to handle like various viruses.
Right.
Like,
oh, my gosh.
We go to another planet and sneeze and we can wipe them all out. Right. Like, they all die in like 2 minutes.
Right.
You know, or they sneeze on us and we're like, oh, you know, like,
right.
My body doesn't know what that is. And down you go.
I just talked about that. Was it last week or week before with one of my guests about, you know, we were talking about aliens coming in, and he said the same thing about the viruses. And I said, well, like, it happened to the Native Americans from Europe.
Smallpox.
So it happens here on Earth. So it definitely can happen, you know, with other planetary beings. So
it would be dangerous. So imagine, like, you finally master time travel and you're like, let's go back to like 2020 and just see what's going on.
Oh God.
And then you bring back COVID.
Right. Right.
Future. Oh no.
They're like,
there's a
my
quarantine
luck.
Happening half a million years from now, like the whole planet shut down.
Right. Couldn't you imagine? They'll be like, abort, abort.
Yeah. Why did you pick that year? You
right.
idiot. Right.
Right. Like, right.
You could have gone like 2 years earlier, whatever, anything, you know?
It's like, Eugene, why did you do that?
Why? That was really dumb. Gosh, didn't you like read the books or anything? Like, I just picked a number, 2020. It sounded sort of nice and round and even.
So, you, I know you focus a lot on the Northeast, but how far out have you gone to do your research on when it comes to the paranormal itself?
Oh, you know, so, I mean, well, Ghost Adventures is
all over, yeah.
But I mean, I've been to Australia and haunted jails and quarantine stations, you know, and I've been to Europe, Canada, all over the U.S., Peru. I was in Peru a couple years ago.
That'd been fun.
It was amazing. Looking at some stories, I'll go anywhere, right? Like, I mean, if there's a story, I'm on my way. All this stuff interests me, and the way different cultures deal with this subject is really interesting to me. You know, when I was in Peru, we got to go to a couple of the cemeteries, which are beautiful. A lot of above ground graves, tons of flowers, but also like beer bottles and like candy wrappers, and not in like a disrespectful way, but people of Peru would literally just go party with their relatives, right? Like, that's sort of part of it, you know? Hey, let's have a picnic. Let's have our favorite drinks and go, you know, hang out with grandma. But the Inca people, I mean, imagine this. Some of the Incas would mummify some of their relatives and put them in caves up in the mountains in the Andes. And during certain festivals, they would go retrieve the relatives and bring them down to be part of like...
Oh, really? You know, they would get actually retrieve them.
So imagine, like, you know, your mother-in-law finally goes and you guys, there she is sitting next to you, you know, like all these years later.
At Bernie. Weekend
that's
at Bernie's.
Right, totally Weekend at Bernie's. But the thing is, but I get it. In a way, it's, you're connecting. You're saying like, hey, we're a byproduct of our parents, our grandparents, and so on. And so they make them a literal part of the celebration. And what I saw, a couple years ago, was I think a continuation of that. Sure, we don't bring the bodies out anymore, but we commune with them. We go to the cemeteries, we have drinks, we have food. And that's a normal part of the culture, to sort of like respect and visit with the dead.
Have you ever, I'm sure you have, the voodoo itself, the voodoo that you do so well.
Yes.
Because every, like you said, every culture has their own way of, he got the cough too.
I'm muted though.
I know
that?
I did. That's why I've been,
if I
go off camera, that's why I've been going off camera to cough. If people don't know, I've been fighting this respiratory, not COVID, but just a respiratory thing.
Right.
But every culture does celebrate, either they celebrate, they mourn, they, whatever reason. But voodoo itself, it's a different culture. Can you tell us your take on the voodoo? 'Cause I always found that one fascinating.
So I've worked on a bunch of stories around New Orleans.
Right.
And what I love about voodoo is that, it's sort of like this collection of various folk magic beliefs from many different cultures, right? So there's certainly African culture in there.
Right.
There's Caribbean, but also Roman Catholic, right? Like the candles, like there's all this mishmash of stuff, which is how they literally express spirituality in like this physical way. Witchcraft, right? I mean, witchcraft is folk magic.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the day, there's an intent, right? I need a spell. I need money.
Right.
I need more money. So I need something to bring money into my life. So you have intent, you gather your materials and so on. Or I want this person to love me, or I want this person to hurt. You know, I want to get back at an enemy. And so for me, I think it's almost like this, a much more tangible belief system. You know, I was raised Catholic, as I said earlier.
Right.
So I would just sit in church. I would watch the priest do all the magic up front, and then I would be thinking about something else until church was over. And then I would go home and be like, yay, it's the longest possible time until there's church again. And so, you know, like it was, so I never really got to put my hands on anything or experience anything. And
right.
I didn't stick with it, but if you're doing voodoo, like you have to do the work, right? The literal work, you got to chop up the ingredients or procure them in some way. And so I think that sweat equity makes you a lot more invested in whatever it is that you're doing spiritually. Something that I know was certainly missing from my Catholicism, because I just sat there, you know, I just sat there and tried to pay attention.
Yeah, I think what introduced me to voodoo was James Bond. Roger Moore's James Bond. I don't remember which one it was, but I don't remember. But I think it was Susan Lucci or something? Not Susan Lucci. What is her name? Oh, God, what is her name? But she played a psychic, and then they went down into New Orleans and then got into the voodoo. Yeah, that's how I was introduced to voodoo, and I thought that was very interesting. And then, of course, I've got to interview many voodoo priestesses and all kinds of stuff over the years. But it's a fascinating religion or culture.
Yeah, but a collection of beliefs, right? Marie Laveau is still a force down there.
Yeah.
I mean, her grave gets visited. People leave candy and cigars and rum, you know. Yeah, I mean, imagine, you know, so if you need any free rum in New Orleans.
Right, just go to her grave.
You know what? Would you do it? If I was like, hey, Tony, look, there's a bottle of rum there. Drink it. Would you take Marie Laveau's?
I don't know, because she might get pissed off. I don't know.
I wouldn't. I'd be like, you know, we'll just go to the bar. Like,
yeah,
get it there.
Yeah, I would be like, yeah. You know, that one drunk friend probably would do it, but, you know, he probably
won't
wouldn't make it home, though.
No, I mean, because, like, think about it. That would gnaw at you, right? You're getting on the airplane to fly home, and you're like, I really should not have drank.
Right, is this plane going down, or am I going to?
Yeah, was that a bad idea?
That was a bad idea.
I can't undo that. Like, I can't undo that horrible insult.
Well, before we get out of here, I mean, I love that you always can come on and give us, you know, amazing stories and your adventures. It's fun. It's kind of reminds me of sitting down with, you know, the grandparents and the parents and just hearing those old stories. You know, those old stories.
I'm not that old.
Well, you're what, 70, 80 or something like that?
I'm getting there. All
right, right. Yeah, whatever. You're a youngin', but it's I just love those old stories of the past and people sharing those stories with our audience. It just I don't know. It's reminds me of good old days. But how do people find out more about how to hear these stories and to watch you and hear your podcast and everything?
Yeah, well, my website, jeffbelanger.com, which I know is hard to spell. So that's got everything I've got going on. The podcast is called New England Legends. I've been doing it every Thursday for over 4 years now. Like I said, they're short, 12 to 15 minutes, you know, scripted with sound effects and voice actors and music and just fun stories about weirdness all around New England. You can get that anywhere you get your podcasts that they're up there now. And then it's the companion to the Amazon Prime series, also called New England Legends, which you can watch if you're a Prime member. It's free. But yeah, and then otherwise I'm still doing Ghost Adventures and on a bunch of Shock Docs that's on Discovery Plus if you're a Plus member. And just grateful to be doing the work, you know, and being able to do this stuff for a living. It's just it's so much fun. I never, as a kid, if you would have told me like someone's gonna pay you to look for ghosts and monsters,
right,
I would have been like, come on, right?
Yeah.
So every day I feel like I'm getting away with something.
Yeah. My dad always said, he goes, I'm childlike, not childish. And you remind me that childlike because I can see that energy of a child that you love what you do and you're still excited about. I mean, I've interviewed you several times over several years and you still have that energy that you still love to do it. So it's great to see that you keep that up.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, but please, everybody, go and support Jeff and his amazing work. His has a great website. You guys can check it out watch all his projects and go to his website. So, but Jeff, thank you so much for always being on Truth Be Told every time we ask, and come back again. It doesn't have to be Halloween, as we said. It's ghosts are all year long.
Look at this. I know. It's great. It's nice to be. Yeah. It's nice that someone takes an interest outside of October. So thank you,
right,
Tony.
Right. Of course. Of course. Well, everybody, thank you guys so much for always tuning in to me. And make sure you tune in on Monday for Minuteman Report with Robert Hensley. You got Bonnie Burkett on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock for Minuteman Report. Truth Be Told, Transformation. That's that spirituality, you know, that guru stuff that you all love. And of course, me every Friday right here on Truth Be Told. So thank you. Until next time, I'm out. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.